so it never came to fruition.
I see. I see that the New York Art Foundation also took part in this commission. What was their involvement?
I think they financed part of it.
I see.
Yeah, but I don't quite remember anymore. Probably gave a grant for it, but a small grant, perhaps $100 or something.
I see. Now this piece is more through composed than was even the Vineyard. This is a piece that just flows from one section to another. It's another piece that can be done as a totality.
Yeah.
And once again, reminiscent of Pierrot from 1929 is the inclusion of a singer.
Yes. Yeah, that's an interesting thing because I don't think there are too many composers who have ever done this.
No.
And I don't think that Zimmer suggested it. It was Eric's idea to have this kind of prophecy of it appears, you know?
I see.
To have this song.
And then once again,
I think it's dramatically very effective when you hear all of a sudden the singing voice.
Oh, yes.
This first part was done, and it was done with a very good singer who afterwards sang the title role in Milo's David that was done here at the Bowl. And he was a very fine singer, student of Zweig.
I see.
And it is really very beautiful, you know, when this prophecy comes there in this voice, biblical God's voice.
A fascinating thing in any major work of Zeisel's is to look for the Baroque procedure. Never does he duplicate. Always he seems to take a Baroque technique and use it in a new way. And certainly a fascinating way in Jacob and Rachel is the variations that appear for the 7 years of Jacob's labor. Did he ever talk about that?
No. I heard it played. And as a matter of fact, Benjamin Zimmer has the tape, and I have several times called him, and he was always promising he would bring it, and he hasn't brought it, and I have only recently, right now, thought I must call him again and maybe go over there and get it, because I want to have that tape, which Eric played on the piano, of the whole thing.
Ah,
you know?
Yes.
But, I heard it only maybe one or two times.
Mm-hmm.
So my memory of that piece isn't so.
In 1955, a couple of significant things happened. First, the series of chamber works was published by Doblinger. What were the circumstances involved there?
Well, Doblinger was the next biggest publisher, and Eric had a friend there, and he wrote to him about this. And they said, he was at the time, of course, professor at the conservatory.
Mm-hmm.
And he said if he thought he could guarantee that he could sell pieces in America, then they would do it. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, of course, not too difficult for Eric to have these pieces sold here. He had so many classes and students, and they were all very interested in his work. And so through the Kaiser here,
And the Kaiser
sold quite a few of them.
I see. And the Kaiser kept several of his manuscripts too, didn't they? That were available on rental.
Yeah.
And then the second significant thing was that Eric turned 50. And there was a wide range of recognition. In fact, it was in all the newspapers, and there were tributes pouring in from all over the world. Were there other events that transpired on this marvelous occasion?
Yes, Curtis Stearns, a friend you know who had done the Christmas variations, Mr. Glenda, he came to Eric. And he said that he wanted to celebrate his 50th birthday. And he arranged with the Musicians Union for underwrote the orchestra.
Uh-huh.
And then Eric put together a program because he had all these artists at his disposal, you know. Ida Schlatter played, and I think singers sing the children's songs and the soprano songs, and